That morning, MacArthur awoke at 6 a.m. and announced that he was ready to give a statement. Not long later, he was back in the same room he had been questioned in the previous evening, sitting at the same table, across from Detectives Joe Shelley and Dennis Donegan. Speaking calmly and with languid deliberation, he dictated to Shelley a long and detailed account in which he outlined how he had killed Bridie Gargan and Donald Dunn, and how he had attempted to commit armed robbery at Harry Beeling's house in Killiney. Having read over and then signed his statement, MacArthur's thoughts turned toward the likely consequences of his actions on the life of his friend, the Attorney General. Because of an act of kindness and plain hospitality on his part, Connolly's career and reputation were now in grave jeopardy. Some form of mitigating action, he felt, was necessary. He requested a pen and paper. Watched over by the detectives, he wrote the following note for the attention of the Taoiseach himself. Dear Sir, I have already stated to the police and wish now to state to you also that my good friend, Mr. Patrick Connolly, attorney, had no knowledge whatsoever of any wrongdoings of mine and must be considered to be utterly blameless. I earnestly hope that the career and happiness of this splendid man shall not be adversely affected. Yours sincerely, Malcolm MacArthur. Of all the things I have learned about MacArthur, that he composed this note at this time seems to me to be the most revealing of his particular strangeness. Here is a man who, having just confessed two murders and an armed robbery, sees fit to write what is essentially a letter of recommendation, pleading the innocence and good character of his friend, the Attorney General, to the man's boss, the leader of the country. Even as he is confessing to having committed the most terrible of crimes, for the most abject of reasons, his understanding of himself as a person whose opinion might influence the Taoiseach remains intact. Even now, 40 years after the murders, having spent much of his life in prison, he retains an abiding sense of himself as an associate member of the establishment, albeit one who went seriously rogue. A man whose terrible actions which he does not for a moment deny, fail in the end to obscure his fundamental probity. From my earliest acquaintance with MacArthur, I was struck by how important it seemed to be to him that he was held in high regard by others. High regard, as I have said, was a signature expression of his. He was always talking about the high regard he was held in by some or other person, or about the people, including occasionally myself, he held in high regard. Once he told me about a letter of recommendation a former school principal had written for him when he was applying to colleges in the United States, in which he described him as a boy of excellent character whom I would unhesitatingly employ in a position of responsibility and trust, and who was possessed of an uncommonly good balance of responsiveness and control. It was clear that this letter of recommendation was, 60 years on, a part of the structure of his self-conception. Despite everything that had since happened, everything that he had done, he remained, in his own mind, a boy of excellent character. He took a distinct pride, too, in the confession he gave to the police that morning. He spoke of it as though it were generally regarded as a classic of its kind. It was an unusually detailed statement, he said, and from the point of view of the Gardaí, an extremely good and reliable one. A senior detective, he told me, had once remarked to him that there were 56 points of corroboration in the statement. In other words, he said, I independently told them 56 things they already knew, thereby proving that I had to have been speaking from experience. Even his confession to a brutal double murder was, to MacArthur, evidence of his own intellectual rigour and moral seriousness.